The Space Crone, 1976. The menopause is probably the least glamorous topic imaginable. And this is interesting because it is one of the very few topics to which cling some shreds and remnants of taboo. A serious mention of menopause is usually met with uneasy silence. A sneering reference to it is usually met with relieved sniggers. Both the silence and the sniggering are pretty sure indications of taboo. Most people would consider the old phrase change of life a euphemism for the medical term menopause, but I, who am now going through the change, begin to wonder if it isn't the other way round. Change of life is too blunt a phrase, too factual. Menopause, with its chime suggestion of a mere pause, after which things go on as before, is reassuringly trivial. But the change is not trivial, and I wonder how many women are brave enough to carry it out wholeheartedly. They give up their reproductive capacity with more or less of a struggle, and when it's gone, they think that's all there is to it. Well, at least I don't get the curse anymore, they say. And the only reason I felt so depressed sometimes was hormones. Now I'm myself again. But this is to evade the real challenge, and to lose not only the capacity to ovulate, but the opportunity to become a crone. In the old days, women who survived long enough to attain the menopause more often accepted the challenge. They had, after all, had practice. They had already changed their life radically once before, when they ceased to be virgins and became mature women, wives, matrons, mothers, mistresses, whores, etc. This change involved not only the physiological alterations of puberty, the shift from barren childhood to fruitful maturity, but a socially recognized alteration of being, a change of condition from the sacred to the profane. With the secularization of virginity now complete, so that the once awesome term virgin is now a sneer, or at best a slightly dated word for a person who hasn't copulated yet, the opportunity of gaining or regaining the dangerous sacred condition of being at the second change has ceased to be apparent. Virginity is now a mere preamble or waiting room to be got out of as soon as possible. It is without significance. Old age is similarly a waiting room, where you go after life's over and wait for cancer or a stroke. The years before and after the menstrual years are vestigial. The only meaningful condition left to women is that of fruitfulness. Curiously, this restriction of significance coincided with the development of chemicals and instruments that make fertility itself a meaningless, or at least secondary characteristic of female maturity. The significance of maturity now is not the capacity to conceive, but the mere ability to have sex. As this ability is shared by pubescence and by postclimacterics, the blurring of distinctions and elimination of opportunities is almost complete. There are no rites of passage because there is no significant change. The triple goddess has only one face. Marilyn Monroe's, maybe. The entire life of a woman from 10 or 12 through 70 or 80 has become secular, uniform, changeless. As there is no longer any virtue in virginity, so there is no longer any meaning in menopause. It requires fanatical determination now to become a crone. Women have thus, by imitating the life condition of men, surrendered a very strong position of their own. Men are afraid of virgins, but they have a cure for their own fear and the virgin's virginity. Fucking. Men are afraid of crones, so afraid of them that their cure for virginity fails them. They know it won't work. Faced with the fulfilled crone, all but the bravest men wilt and retreat. Crestfallen, and cock-a-droop. Menopause Manor is not merely a defensive stronghold, however. It is a house or household fully furnished with the necessities of life. In abandoning it, women have narrowed their domain and impoverished their souls. There are things the old woman can do, say, and think that the woman cannot do, say, or think. The woman has to give up more than her menstrual periods before she can do, say, or think them. She has got to change her life. The nature of that change is now clearer than it used to be. Old age is not virginity, but a third and new condition. The virgin must be celibate, but the crone need not. There was a confusion there, which the separation of female sexuality from reproductive capacity via modern contraceptives has cleared up. Loss of fertility does not mean loss of desire and fulfillment, but it does entail a change involving matters even more important, if I may venture a heresy, than sex. The woman who is willing to make that change must become pregnant with herself at last. She must bear herself, her third self, her old age, with travail and alone. Not many will help her with that birth. Certainly no male obstetrician will time her contractions, inject her with sedatives, stand ready with forceps, and neatly stitch up the torn membranes. It's hard even to find an old-fashioned midwife these days. That pregnancy is long, that labor is hard. Only one is harder, and that's the final one. The one that men also must suffer and perform. It may well be easier to die if you have already given birth to others or yourself at least once before. This would be an argument for going through all the discomfort and embarrassment of becoming a crone. Anyhow, it seems a pity to have a built-in rite of passage and to dodge it, evade it, and pretend nothing has changed. That is to dodge and evade one's womanhood, to pretend one's like a man. Men, once initiated, never get the second chance. They never change again. That's their loss, not ours. Why borrow poverty? Certainly the effort to remain unchanged, young, when the body gives so impressive a signal of change as the menopause, is gallant. But it is a stupid, self-sacrificial gallantry, better befitting a boy of 20 than a woman of 45 or 50. Let the athletes die young and laurel-crowned. Let the soldiers earn the purple hearts. Let women die old, white-crowned, with human hearts. If a spaceship came by from the friendly natives of the fourth planet of Altair, and the polite captain of the spaceship said, "We have room for one passenger. Will you spare us a single human being so that we may converse at leisure during the long trip back to Altair and learn from an exemplary person the nature of the race?" I suppose what most people would want to do is provide them with a fine, bright, brave young man, highly educated and in peak physical condition. A Russian cosmonaut would be ideal. American astronauts are mostly too old. There would surely be hundreds, thousands of volunteers, just such young men, all worthy. But I would not pick any of them. Nor would I pick any of the young women who would volunteer, some out of magnanimity and intellectual courage, others out of a profound conviction that Altair couldn't possibly be any worse for a woman than Earth is. What I would do is go down to the local Woolworths or the local village marketplace and pick an old woman, over 60, from behind the costume jewelry counter or the betel nut booth. Her hair would not be red or blonde or lustrous dark. Her skin would not be dewy fresh. She would not have the secret of eternal youth. She might, however, show you a small snapshot of her grandson, who was working in Nairobi. She is a bit vague about where Nairobi is, but extremely proud of the grandson. She has worked hard at small, unimportant jobs all her life. Jobs like cooking, cleaning, bringing up kids, selling little objects of adornment or pleasure to other people. She was a virgin once, a long time ago, and then a sexually potent, fertile female, and then went through menopause. She has given birth several times and faced death several times, the same times. She is facing the final birth-death a little more nearly and clearly every day now. Sometimes her feet hurt something terrible. She never was educated to anything like her capacity, and that is a shameful waste and a crime against humanity, but so common a crime should not and cannot be hidden from Altair. And anyhow, she's not dumb. She has a stock of sense, wit, patience, and experiential shrewdness, which the Altarians might or might not perceive as wisdom. If they are wiser than we, then of course we don't know how they'd perceive it, but if they are wiser than we, they may know how to perceive that inmost mind and heart which we, working on mere guess and hope, proclaim to be humane. In any case, since they are curious and kindly, let's give them the best we have to give. The trouble is, she will be very reluctant to volunteer. What would an old woman like me do on Altair, she'll say. You ought to send one of those scientist men. They can talk to those funny-looking green people. Maybe Dr. Kissinger should go. What about sending the shaman? It will be very hard to explain to her that we want her to go because only a person who has experienced, accepted, and acted the entire human condition, the essential quality of which is change, can fairly represent humanity. Me, she'll say, just a trifle slyly. But I never did anything. But it won't wash. She knows, though she won't admit it, that Dr. Kissinger has not gone and will never go where she has gone. That the scientists and the shamans have not done what she has done. Into the spaceship, Granny.